Hey, this is Michelle, and you're listening to Words with Michelle, the podcast, a show where I sit down and have conversations with influencers on a range of topics, anything from natural hair, employment, discrimination, food, relationships, and everything in between. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. If you want to send me an email, hit me up at michelle@wordsmichelle.com. Welcome back to Words with Michelle, the podcast, a podcast where I, your host, Michelle, spotlights inspiring change makers, innovators, and voices you need to hear. I want to start off saying thank you for tuning in to the very first episode of 2026. I'm excited to be celebrating my 6th year of podcasting and publishing my 100th episode. Yes, this is the 100th episode. My next episode will be a celebration of this amazing milestone. I'll keep you posted when that drops. On today's episode, I'm joined by Joseph Galawango, a DJ, educator, and author whose work blends music, learning, and a celebration of culture. Joseph shares how creativity can be a powerful tool for connection and education. Joseph speaks about his role as an educator. He also speaks about his first book, Dominique the DJ, and speaks about the purpose behind creating his platform, Record School. So if you're a parent, educator, or just love music, this is a conversation that you don't want to miss. Before we start the show, I asked Joseph to introduce himself. Thanks for being on the show, Joseph.
So thank you for sitting with me today.
Thank you so much, Michelle. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. So can you tell the audience a bit about you? Just tell us a bit about Joseph.
Sure. So I wear a lot of hats. I am an educator, a writer, a DJ, and also an organizer. And so in my day-to-day life, also a husband and a father. So one day you might see me promoting my children's book called Dominique the DJ, which is about me being a father and also a DJ and sharing that experience with my oldest daughter, Dominique. But I also, it's interesting because basically I'm an organizer and an educator. So I'm also someone who is a DJ, and I have been DJing for 20 years. And I think about DJ culture and I practice DJ culture in a very specific way. My focus is on vinyl records and my focus is on actual culture. So the people who are participating in the act of DJing, the people who are part of keeping the community together and keeping the community rich, and the, you know, whether those are, you know, people who run record stores or people who have just like kept the culture alive, as well as the people who are the ones making the music. And then that also filters into my day job, which is an educator, which combines, you know, classroom teaching, consulting, doing presentations in different parts of the world. That's kind of a summary of who I am. I'm very thankful to be someone that wears these different hats. It's a little nutty when you I hear myself, you know, saying it out loud because it sounds like a lot, but that's who I am.
Wow, it is a lot, but that's good. I mean, yes. I'm going to touch upon everything because you went into, you said a little bit of everything, like you do a lot. Mm-hmm. You said organizer. Yep. What is that? What do you mean you're an organizer?
Good question. Looking at myself as an organizer, so this is where that comes from. So for example, on Saturday, we have our 2nd annual Henry's Records Festival. It's a big festival to honor the work of Henry Marks and one of the best record stores in Toronto called Henry's Records. And all the different things that we do in the community. And I was thinking about myself. I'm like, oh, like all these different things that we're, all these different spaces that we're in trying to create new possibilities. That's kind of what organizing is. I never thought about myself as an organizer because every time I've heard that term, it's in the context of people that go to a lot of protests and they publish their own magazines like Huey Newton and Black Panthers and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, oh, and it's usually in a very political context. But I'm like, oh, I guess I am an organizer, you know, because I'm always out. And a lot of times I'm out making connections to some type of initiative or some type of work or some type of goal. So I was like, oh, I guess I am an organizer. So that's where that comes from.
So So I wanted to ask you, there's a bunch of things I wanted to ask you because you, like you said, you have a lot of different hats. Like you're a teacher, a DJ. I want to ask you a bit about the DJing because I mean, you do have record school, and we'll talk about that a bit in a moment. When did you get into DJing? When did you
That's
have
a good
that?
question. Specifically, I got into DJing around 1998. So up until that point, I was just a very avid, enthusiastic hip hop head and music listener. But I don't think I really paid attention to the art of DJing. I probably had some favorite DJs, but it switched around 1998 and 99 for a couple reasons.
Okay.
So my love of hip hop, it expanded into more electronic music because around that time, electronic music and house music and jungle music started to come in my radar. So there were some producers like Ronnie Size from England and Goldie from England. We started listening to that stuff, and I started, this is in Windsor, I started spending more time at the radio station there and just checking out other types of music. And these are music, this is music that's not made by rappers, it's music that's made by, or singers, it's music that's made by DJs and producers. And I started liking them, right? And then there was this album that came out, it's called Sound Bombing 2. It's a hip-hop album from Ruckus Records, so it's kind of underground, Mos Def, Talib Kweli, that kind of crew. And we started listening to that. And it's an album, but it's also a mixtape. So all the songs are mixed by the DJs and you can hear scratching. And then the internet around, 1998, 9, we could kind of see who these people were, go on their web page and whatever message boards. And then so I was just like checking out this kind of rap and this kind of rave music at the time, jungle and stuff. And then I decided to buy a record. And then in September of 99, I moved to Toronto. I went to York University and I had a couple records with me, like Big L and just 12 Inches Like That and Black Star's album, just to have. But then I met all these other DJs and people who are my age who are actually DJs. And I'm like, oh man, this is a thing that you can do. I never thought about it like that before. And then I'm like, wow, I want to do that too. So then I started paying more attention and then getting connected to more underground music, underground radio, CHRY would have all these DJ shows. And then the guys would literally show up and have their records and play. And I'm like, whoa. So this is when I first become neighbors and friends and interacting with people who are DJs in there. So it became something that I could be a part of. And here we are. But that's when I got into DJing around 98, 99, definitely 2000. Then I got a job at the Casino Windsor. So I was a janitor, night janitor. So that's how I got my money for my turntables.
Nice, nice,
Yeah,
nice,
that's where that
nice.
connection comes in.
I love the backstory and stuff like that.
I love Joseph's intro into DJing, so I followed up the question and I asked him about his current role as an educator.
So my role as an educator started out as a classroom teacher, a high school teacher, teaching English, social science, and different music courses. Actually, yeah, different music courses, even different art courses. Now, thank God, I've been able to evolve. So my job as an educator is a little bit more abstract, right? So for the past 4 years, I've been what's called a learning coach in the equity department. So what that is coaching and consulting teachers and staff members, so even principals and vice principals, about making their course content as culturally responsive and as equitable as possible, in accordance to the Toronto District School Board equity policy and different expectations about what culturally relevant and responsive pedagogy is. So I started out as a classroom teacher back in mid to, you know what, back in September of 2007, moving into 2008. So when Obama set it off, that's when I set it off.
Nice.
So
That was a
yeah,
good time. That was a good
exactly.
time.
So I started off teaching English and co-op and social science for high school, mostly downtown Toronto schools. So I blend stuff. So and then I was able to get into some schools where I was able to create some of my own courses. So sometimes that can happen. There's a school will have a budget or the mandate is like we can bring in some new type of learning into the school. That was an opportunity that I got. And also people realized, hey, do you have any ideas? So I created a course called Sound Messages, which was really cool, which was a combination, is a 2-credit high school course for grade 11 and 12 students. It combined the social justice and equity credit to music production, right?
I wish I
Right.
was taking that. That sounds like
Yeah, I
fun.
know. Everyone says that.
No, it sounds like you feel it sucks when you think about when I was in school, like none of this stuff was available. But to know that kids have that as an access, like have access to
Yeah.
that,
That
they're
wasn't
so
available
lucky.
for me too.
Nothing was available. Jeez.
yeah, with that course, we made podcasts about songs that gave the students a real sense of identity. And that was very, very fun because students were talking from a critical lens about songs, which range from like soca songs from Masha Montano to Biggie, Suicidal Thoughts. Yeah, to a popular one that we actually all mandatorily analyzed was J. Cole, a combination of Love Yours and Wet Dreams. That was in 2004 when he did the Forest Hills Drive album. So there was a lot of J. Cole because it just kind of spoke to what the students were thinking about, and the messages were just incredible. And then we also analyzed things like Kendrick Lamar, Good Kid, Mad City. So that's a little bit of some of the interesting highlights of my educational philosophy is hip hop and Black culture and cultures that connect with not just Black students, but students who are, familiar with hip hop or familiar with the urban experience and pop culture is part of what I offer. And there is a practice of teaching, which is called culturally relevant and responsive pedagogy, which is basically a style of teaching that is, and that term comes from an educator in the US called Dr. Gloria Ladson Billings. Basically, it's her research was in the US in the 80s and 90s. There's a lot of Black students that were failing, right? But she researched a lot of teachers who were having success. And she's like, what are they doing? And she wrote this book called The Dream Keepers. And that's the story of what's the common thing that these teachers were doing. And it's three things. It's having a high standard and a high expectation of academic achievement. Not necessarily all A's, but just like whatever you need to do to get yourself to the next level, we are going to do it. And we know there's an expectation that we're going to get this thing done, right? We're going to get this. There's going to be achievement for this individual, right? The other one, it's kind of a mouthful, but the other one is called cultural competence. So that means that, your culture that you bring in, whether your neighborhood, your accent, your interest, whatever your culture is going to be something that is embraced in this learning space. And actually, when you move out of this learning space, you're going to be able to represent it in a way that is an asset to you. You know what I mean? So if you're a young girl and you have locks or you have red hair, your name's Michelle, and you come from Trinidad, that's going to be something that you actually take with you as an asset because it's embraced in this classroom, right? So that's cultural competence. And then the third thing is called critical consciousness, which also is a term that Paulo Freire from Brazil, who wrote a book called The Pedagogy of the Oppressed. He coined the term critical consciousness. And that's basically the practice of when you have students, you make them aware of different ways that the system or society that they're in is actually perpetuating oppression. So whether it's like whatever, poverty or school funds or, a Eurocentric lens or whatever the case may be. Whatever type of systemic oppression the students that are part of that student's world, critical consciousness is it actually allows thinking about that type of oppression to be part of the learning, and then also figuring out how to have tools to fight back against that oppression. You know what I mean? So whether it's something like making podcasts or whatever the case may be, but like this is, our music or our identity is not being represented. Okay, what are we going to do to change that? So all those three things are culturally relevant and responsive pedagogy. So that's part of what I've been doing. And, over the past few years as an educator, I have been coaching other educators and creating resources and moving around to try and make people more competent in that style of education.
That's awesome. Like you're doing everything you want to do. Like, I mean, you're, no, it's true. Like you're educating, you have your music. Like it's just, everything is just, it's like a mixture of everything you love. No, like it's just, that's what it seems like. It's like, it's a
No,
joy.
it's true.
It
It's
sounds like
true.
it's a
It's true.
joy.
It's
Oh my
true.
gosh. That's amazing. I wish I could be a kid again that could take these courses. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm an adult and I guess I could do my own research, but it's kind of cool to be in a school situation and have access to this, you know?
Well, thank you. I laugh because it's not easy, because a lot of the stuff I have to create, you know what I
Okay.
mean? But I do laugh also because it's true what you said. I am doing all these things, and these are things that come from the heart. And I got a little bit of experience. I got a little bit of game. I'm almost like 20 years in this whole DJing education life. So I'm very thankful.
That's awesome. Oh my gosh. So then, what inspired you to create Record School then?
I think when my kids were born, so I was always, it's basically me recognizing the transition between being a dad with more responsibilities and having less time to DJ. And also figuring out, okay, how am I still going to make my mark? Because DJs want to make their mark. They want to, traditionally, they want to maybe go out at clubs or parties and just do their thing and rock the crowd, or whether it's, recording in their studio and making mixes or just showing and proving, right? And so I realized that, okay, I have to make my mark differently. And also I grew up studying music through, reading magazine articles. And actually, I went to university for English and journalism, so I was even writing
Oh, nice.
writing a lot about music since I was a teenager. So I'm always thinking about it. So my music, my interaction with music is a combination of listening, producing, but also analyzing and writing.
That's good. Oh, wow.
So I realized that, okay, I'm not going to be out DJing full time at all, because I also have a full time job. So Record School was just my ideas about music that I can put into a platform or a business or a production company. And so every kind of idea about music that I have, that's how I'm able to put it out and to distribute it. So it's essentially a brand, or my brand about my thoughts about music, and also my creations, and also my collaborations. And it just is a combination of, my two sides of my brain. Record School. Record is just my music analysis and everything that I deal with in music. And then the school is adding an educational component to it, because that's kind of the culture that I come from, right? Is people who are in the music culture, but also with a lot of thought to it. So it's not just consuming. It's me putting out, whether it's blog posts, we've done videos. Now I'm into doing festivals and events and a lot of other things.
So is it more about the preservation of the culture and the music? Or is it like, do you do any courses or do anything? Like, do you educate in, I guess, more in a hands-on way? Like,
Good question. It's more of, you could say, education and
okay.
putting out content. So as far as me educating in a hands-on way, I do that in my content. And then also a lot of content on YouTube. And then also one of the coolest things we did was a short film. And now actually, let me not forget, even my book is published kind of under Record School. So it ranges from, the most, the most current product is my children's book called Dominique the DJ that you can get from Record School. It's going to be on Amazon soon. It's going to be, and right now we're kind of on the ground a lot. And I tell people, that I'm in my early masterpiece stage. You know what I mean? So just moving around, having the product, connecting with people, and it's something that I'm proud of. But that's my most recent, I guess you could say, piece of content in education from Record School, which is the children's book about a man who is sharing an opportunity to DJ with his daughter, and he helps her move through feeling nervous and feeling anxious to feeling joy, and also making a connection between DJing and connecting DJing to joy, and also things like, you know, African spirituality because of the drums, and also sharing with the community, right? And then another piece that I'm proud of with Record School is it's an essay. Actually, it's an essay, but it's a resource for teachers that I wrote last year. So yeah, that's kind of an example of where I use Record School to make a lot of observations that I think are important, because, you know, I mentioned that I got into DJing in the, you know, at the turn of the century, around 2000, 1999. Now I'm in my 40s, right? And I think we have to evolve, right? So people like myself who are, you know, hip hop heads and in the culture, I think, you know, I think it's important for us to be having a critical lens of what the culture is putting out, what's being said, and how to make sure we're still educating each other, and not, you know, beyond just entertaining each other. So that's a little bit about me. I hope I answer your question.
No, I like what you said. I mean, it went in different places, but I'm kind of glad what you said.
On you.
That was really interesting. But I actually like what you said at the end about, I guess, to me, the way I took it is more so like how music is going, and you want it just not just be for entertainment purposes. I think you just want to keep the culture alive and keep it vibrant and keep it positive and educational.
Well, I would say the culture is always going to be alive. What I'm focusing on is the critical lens of kind of discussing important pieces of the culture and things that are said in terms of hip hop culture, black music culture, and maybe provoking important conversations that keep us elevated. You know what I mean? Because I would say the culture is going to be alive. And if we're talking, let's say we're talking about hip hop and DJ culture. It's evolving, it's going to be live. But what I'm interested in is not just what matters, but like important conversations, important observations that I notice, right? That might be left out.
I want to ask you, okay, because you love music. Do you love all types of music? Like, what kind of music do you like?
I do love all kinds of music. Oh man. Well, okay. I listen to a lot of different stuff. I've been listening to a lot of Afro beat and like old African funk over the past little week. Like Fela Kuti, and there's this incredible Trini band that I found. But they play Afrobeat as well. They're called the Black Truth Rhythm Band. Look that up. I found them. It was when I was in Paris. I was digging them.
When I was in
Black.
Paris, listen
It's
to
a little bit of a flex. I listen to Gil Scott-Heron. I listen to hip hop. I listen to Black Thought. He's one of my favorite rappers because he's evolved, right? Black Thought, Killer Mike. I've been doing a lot of back and forth debates about the new Clips album, and been listening to Chronix is one of my favorites. The Staple Singers. Yeah, man. I listen to a lot of music. You want to hear something crazy that I don't really talk to people about? I listen to a lot of gospel too. This
Oh,
is
nice.
Pastor T.L. Barrett. This like funky, incredible gospel. Sometimes in the summertime, I turn on the country station and I
No
listen to
way.
country music. Yeah.
Wow,
And that
that's shocking. Not shocking in a bad way, but I mean, I didn't think you would
I
say.
feel you. There's not a lot of us say that, but it's kind of deep, you know? So the thing is with country music, I use it. It's, you know, pretty chill. That works. But I also use it as analysis when I think about hip hop culture. And that's where I was like, oh, I don't even know how where to start. So I'll be real. I'll be brief. Okay. So the subject matter in a lot of country songs just like the subject matter in a lot of popular hip hop songs has a framework. So there's certain things that are popular to talk about, right? So in a lot of country songs, they talk about like environment, like driving in a truck to the lake, and love songs with my sweetheart, whatever. But they also talk about family, and a lot of songs are about like my grandpa or raising a child with you or having a family and that kind of thing, right? And there's a freedom there. They can talk about family. But with a lot of our music, especially mainstream hip hop, you don't get, the artists are not encouraged to talk about family or to talk about vulnerability or talk about like their grandpa or talk about wanting to be in love and just kind of chill. You know what I mean? There's a certain subject matter in a lot of our music that you hear, and there's subject matter that's very healthy, which you don't hear. That's kind
Wow.
of, yeah, that's the compare and contrast that I have in my head when listening to different genres of music.
That's so deep. Oh my gosh. So what country do you listen to country as an old country? Like old, or do you listen to new country?
Sometimes whatever's on the radio, and even there's like, yeah, so even there's stuff like the Post Malone stuff, but sometimes there's on the whatever's on the radio, which I don't even know the names of it. I do have a list of older songs that I know that I'm like, you're getting me in a vulnerable place, because I'm like, I don't really tell people this because people are gonna look at me like I'm
Well, I'll
crazy.
tell you something after. I will tell you
Okay.
something as well, too, then.
But since I listen to Southern hip hop, a lot of the Southern hip hop artists, and I watch their interviews, they reference that music too, because it's like it's in Texas. So there's this guy called Devin the Dude, who's a Texas rapper, and he was talking about how he listens to Bunny Wailer, which I love Bunny Wailer too. But he also listens to like Willie Nelson and like Randy Travis, because it's all Texas. I'm like, that's true. So there's an old song from when I was a kid, used to come on the radio, and I used to be like so annoyed because, and I'm like 9 years old. I want to listen to like MC Hammer and like Kid and Play. But the song's called Forever and Ever Amen by Randy Travis. Old song. But it's interesting because it's like it's a love song. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool that like those messages are like, I don't know. They're, you
Oh, it's
know what I mean?
fostered and it's allowed. It's like fostered
Yeah,
and allowed.
and so it's just like, a lot of our music is not allowed to go into like a soft place or talk about love or talk about family or talk about those kind of things. So that's kind of, I think about that. And I think about the effects of that messages in the music.
Okay, so I'll tell you because you said you felt vulnerable. So I'll just let you
Yeah.
know, which most people don't know. I probably will keep this in the show. When my babysitter, when we were kids, my mom had this lady that was in the neighborhood. It was a white lady, and when she babysat us, all we heard was country. I knew like I don't know who the artists are now, but I remember sitting in her I guess family or whatever, and just hearing pure country music. No one knows this. Like only my family knows this.
Good
Only
for
me, my
you
sister,
for
and my
opening
brother.
up.
But yeah, because I want to let you know. Like I mean, I don't even feel any way about it. Like because it's just it kind of did raise me in the sense that and it was old country. So it's like I'm talking about
Gotcha.
like old because my babysitter was older, obviously. So it was
Right, right,
her
right.
music. So I'm not sure if it was like I don't know how old that was, to be quite honest. Who it was probably like real country music. You know what I mean? But yeah. So I guess I'm not sure if I could say I had an appreciation. Yeah, I guess I had an appreciation
Sure.
for it back then.
Well, yes. And it just kind of makes you think about, and especially with like Beyonce's, introducing the conversation with Cowboy Carter about black presence in country music. Because I was listening to it, I'm like, a lot of this stuff is just based on the blues anyway. Based on the blues anyway. I mean, so there's a black root to it, but it makes you think about what we're programmed to accept and what we're programmed to say, oh, that's not for us. Effects of, if we are limited in terms of what we produce, what we listen to, and all that kind of stuff.
As I approached the end of the show, I wanted to thank Joseph for sharing details about his important role in schools and in the community. Thanks for being on the show.
But I want to say thank you for sitting with me. Where can we get a hold of you if someone wants to know more about
Question.
Joseph?
Recordschool.com is my website. A school spelled with Skool, right? The K is for comedic connections, because we are everything that I do is connected to like African consciousness and also knowledge of self and also my allegiance to KRS-One and Boogie Down Productions. Also, I'm pretty heavy online. So also Record School YouTube, and then Instagram.
You're perfect. Well, thank you again for sitting with me and for chatting with me. So thanks for enlightening
Also,
us.
for my book, Dominique the DJ, there's a website, dominiquethedj.com.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
Thanks for
Michelle. I
joining us.
appreciate you very
Not a
much.
problem,
This
not a
has been
problem.
great.
This has been
Thank you.
awesome.
I enjoyed getting to know Joseph better and finding out how he has injected music, history, and culture in his classes. Before I end this episode, I would like you to know that this show is sponsored by my book, Words with Michelle, Inspirational Conversations with Today's Black Canadian Changemakers, a book that supports the amplification and continuation of Black Canadian stories. Words with Michelle is available on Amazon and Indigo. Happy reading, y'all.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. I'd love to hear from you. Send me a message or share your thoughts on social media on my Instagram page at WordsWMichelle, on TikTok at WordsWithMichelle, and my YouTube channel at WordsWithMichelle. And don't forget to subscribe and leave a message on Spotify and Apple Podcasts so more listeners can find the show. Until next time, bye.